girl. Love the mess, I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning. While Mary looked up yearning, I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big tie.
Hello, and you are listening to Wozo Radio, 103.9 FM, low power FM in Knoxville, Tennessee. And this is Doubter 5, and with us we have River. Hello, River.
Hello.
And we have the Wombat.
The Wombat! Extended for delays.
Yeah, welcome back, Wombat.
Thanks. Hey, what's up?
Thanks for joining us.
Good to be back.
And this is an atheism show. We'll be talking about atheism, free thought, humanism, rational thought, and science. And we'll also be talking about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are a lot of atheist songs, and you'll hear some of them right here on this program and generally on this station as they are in rotation. We'll also be talking about atheist and rationalist groups that are here in Knoxville and how you might be able to connect with them. And did you know that there's also an atheist television show broadcasting here in Knoxville?
Why are you so quiet right now?
I don't know. Usually somebody has something to say about that.
I don't know. That was a weird, awkward pause. And there are people looking at me right now.
Incredulity, usually. now we've had a show in Knoxville for 6 years now. And we'll be talking about that later on, how you can watch the show. Wombat, you're bringing a topic today. Would you like to jump into that for us?
Sure. Sound check, am I coming in good?
You're coming
this
in.
Is a heavy one.
Yeah, you're coming in great.
Okay, I want to talk about Christian Science, specifically Christian Science. Then we can tackle some of the other religions' views of science ahead of time. But I found that while I was a Christian for like about 20 years, maybe 21 years while I was growing up, I never really had to question what was going on, well, from what I was learning.
Yeah.
Even if I was on a science path through college, I never really had to question my faith because I always had an explanation that explained why I could be both very religious and believe in talking snakes and people walking on water, as well as science with atoms and Lewis structures and molecules and, you know, entropy and whatnot. I was able to combine the two very easily. Or reconcile the two very easily. And when the way I separated the two was, God is the why, but science is the how. And I've noticed that a lot of people, now that I'm out of the faith, a lot of people still point at science as how, but God as a why. And I don't like that relationship as much anymore. I find it a little bit tedious. It's not necessary.
Yeah.
And I find that a lot of other religions do the same thing too, but what I'd really like to go over today is just examples of how Christians have rationalized certain things in the Bible that are not scientific, but still claim that they're science, or at least use science to support what they're saying.
Well, I'm sure we have a lot of people in the audience that would wonder what the heck you're going to do to reconcile the two, because they've been studying that and worrying about it themselves. So let me throw out the phone number. If you'd like to call in and join the conversation, the number is 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937 in Knoxville. And we welcome your calls. The lines are open. Anyway, how do you reconcile that, Ty?
So, how about we just start with some of the greatest hits?
Okay.
Okay, so, you know, we've gone through, now there's not a lot of Christians that would absolutely to the death defend the Noah's Ark story.
Uh-huh.
But since I'm in Kentucky right now, and I'm like maybe within driving distance of the Ark that they just built up here, park up here, I can't imagine that I wouldn't find or run into someone who would explain you know, hey, I do believe that this is scientifically proven, and if I try to bring up anything, they would start to cut it down. So maybe we can start with some of the things Christians may use to cut down science while also supporting science when it agrees with them. And one of the first things I would say is carbon dating. Carbon dating is a way that scientists use to figure out how old something is, and when it agrees with the Christian narrative, they're totally fine with it. You never hear any stories of people arguing, like, you know, the dating of temples in Jerusalem, or dating, like, when volcanoes went off, or books of records that go only to about 6,000 years and limits at just that point in time. But when people use it to explain, you know, like, hey, you know, this finding that you found, like, if you claim that, so there are Christians that claim to have found Noah's Ark, like in the hills of Turkey, and scientists have done carbon dating on those kinds of materials that they're able to recover or share for scientific analysis, and the immediate test that you would do is a carbon dating analysis to see if it was actually as old as the people who presented the pieces of Noah's Ark would claim. And none of them fit. And instead of just saying, hey, okay, so maybe this may not be as accurate as we thought, science, or Christians would rather tackle the entire foundation of carbon dating as a whole and try to discredit that.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, they're using for ammunition lies that have been put out by the Christian community in places like, what is it, Stories from Genesis. There's creation science websites.
Yeah.
Discovery Institute websites. These are things putting out there that where they may or may not know the truth. And if they don't know the truth, then I couldn't factually call it a lie. But it's certainly different disinformation. And you're right, they don't have any trouble with the science that agrees with them, but woe betide any scientist that disagrees with the Bible.
And also,
they cut it out.
Yeah.
And also their inconsistencies with the different dates for certain artifacts, religious artifacts, for making points, such as the Shroud of Turin and such things. It's a big one that comes up often.
Yeah. I'm not really sure how well they tied it down, but I've understood that they seem to think it's come from the 15th century when they carbon dated it.
Yeah, that's one timing. And another one, which I have nothing on, I'm just... documentaries, which instantly kind of takes away from, I think.
Sure. Yeah. But even if they did find a shroud, who in the heck can prove that it was Jesus' shroud? Even if it came from that time period. There's just no way to tie that.
If you look at the imprint on that shroud, it looks like very much the Italian interpretation of what Jesus looked like, and not at all like anyone who was actually born and raised in Jerusalem in the Mesopotamian era. Mm-hmm. It looks like it came out of a drawing straight up from Leonardo da Vinci.
Right. So true.
Just fill it in with some color. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what was the name of there was some aristocrat's son that they used for the basis of his drawings. Can you remember the name of it?
No, that's actually pretty fascinating. I can look that up right now.
Something Borgia? I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But please do, if you can find it real quick, let me know.
Let's ask the audience.
Sorry? Yeah. Anybody out there listening knows the son of the aristocrat that they used for most of the contemporary Jesus drawings, and at the time that, let's say, the Enlightenment and was brought forward from there. Anyway, getting back to Christian science, who knows how many fatalities can be laid at the feet of their doctrine of not allowing blood transfusions or... allowing health benefits to be applied to people who are sick just due to their beliefs that you can't do that. I mean, children die every year in the Christian Science.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. And so also a branch of Christianity, in a sense, at least because they share the same holy book, Jehovah's Witnesses have a strict rule on no blood transfusions as part of their religious dogma.
Right.
And because of that, if my mom gets sick, I can't give her blood to save her life. It's a really, really stressful thing for me to think about, mm-hmm. and I try not to think about it so much. And I hope there's like an opportunity that I'll be able to convince her, if that's the case, because there's no one else in our family that shares the same blood type. So it's one of those things where, you know, there's a reason why we have science, and there's a reason why Christian science may exist. And I think the aims of the two are completely different. One is designed to push humanity forward, and the other one's designed to keep humanity at a certain level so that it can continue to be indoctrinated for generations to come.
Yeah. Did you know that Christian science has prayer practitioners that if you're seriously concerned about the health of your youngster or your wife or someone, and you call Christian Science, they will send somebody out, professional prayer practitioners, to pray for your loved one, and that's all they do.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
I didn't even know that's still existed. You know, we're not too far away from the time when they actually start to do exorcisms. Like, that used to be a very popular thing just about 40 years ago. And now, because, and I hope this is the result, because of the internet, because of things like YouTube, you know, like Wikipedia, like just easy access to information, exorcisms have dropped down dramatically over the last generation, maybe the last few generations.
Well, I think it's
completely trivial. Most people don't even take it seriously anymore.
I think it's reported instances that have dropped and not actual, not actually the practice itself. As of like just a few years ago, the Catholic Church was recruiting more people, more priests, to do exorcisms.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's disheartening.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to check the numbers then. That's not good news.
That doesn't address Protestantism, though, so I don't really know the numbers there.
Sure. I hope the increase in priests is more of just inflated supply, not so much inflated demand.
Right.
So let's go into the next greatest hits in the Bible. This is a smaller one. It's a much smaller one. Wine into water. Have you guys heard this one before?
What about it?
We're
familiar with it.
One guy magically converts water into something that contains both water as well as sugar and tannins and antioxidants and flavonoids. And dyes of various types to generate a wine that people can drink. He makes molecules out of thin air.
That's the story.
And no one's freaking out?
That's the story. I mean, we've got to realize it's just the story. I mean, Paul Bunyan and his Blue Ox theoretically created the Smokies and the Rocky Mountains and the plains in between from their fight. But it's the story. Nobody gives it any credence. And I'm not sure.
It is a story, but it's one of those stories that really irked me, because I always consider, so here is a guy who has all the power of the universe, and he's turning water into a fruit drink, but the thing is, he's making new matter out of nothing to make wine, because in chemistry we have this thing called balanced equations, and balanced equations means whatever goes in needs to come out.
Yeah.
So if I have water, if I don't add anything to the water, I'm only going to end up with water. But Jesus is creating organic molecules to add to the water to make wine. And what's really cool is that he has the ability to make anything. He could have made, you know, like, if he's at that level, he can have the ability to make a magical elixir that can cure any disease and replenish itself for all of humanity. He could have made a drink that made anyone instantly immortal and could speak eloquently and can tell the faith at all times. He could have made a drink that just glowed in the dark and could have been the new form of electricity or batteries that we use today instead of lithium ion stuff.
Uh-huh.
Like he had the opportunity for anything, but he's like, mm-hmm. No, fruit drink, I'm at a party, let's just relax a little bit.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of ways of looking at it, but even if it's not just a story, if he actually seemed to have done that, I mean, there are many magicians, stage magicians, that are alive today that could pull something like that off. It's not a hard trick to do if he's just trying to fool people.
I'm at the point where if he wasn't trying to fool people, like if that was a legitimate thing he did, like if that story is 100% true,
mm-hmm.
I'm annoyed that he just chose to make juice when he could have made literally anything at all,
right.
when he had the power to do anything. That's what annoys me the most.
Yeah.
If he's just fooling people, he's just fooling people. That's fine. That's what I expect. But if you really, if that's a true story that people support and say, hey, this actually happened in my holy book, and I believe it 100%, I can't imagine why you want to be angry that he didn't make anything else other than a fruit drink at a party.
Right. Well, if you really want to be angry, why would he kill a fig tree that's out of season and for not bearing fruit for him? I mean, that's really snippy of God, of Jesus to do something like that.
Yeah, God is completely against figs. It's like all over the Bible. Mm-hmm. It's just been weirdly interpreted.
Yeah.
What do you think, Richard?
Mm-hmm. Oh, just a bunch of jokes come to mind. How that's worded and just memes I've seen. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I've always found that God hates facts. F-A-C-T-S, facts. Because they definitely stack up against his existence.
And also the mention about when you had an opportunity to, well, you know, to water into wine, it's kind of, it brings to mind all the things of hardening the heart of Pharaoh, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, could have been merciful, but did that make a point? Why?
So you could loose the plagues on Egypt and kill a bunch of people and animals and stuff, and just show how big a power he is.
Yeah, I mean, it boggles the mind.
He sends a guy to get his people free, and then at the point of them going free, he hardens the heart of Pharaoh. And then he's got to kill babies and poison rivers and throw all kinds of temper tantrums, basically, around. It's always seemed to me that God of the Bible is acting like a spoiled 8-year-old.
Yeah, and
he could also be acting like a very all-powerful dictator, which he is, in a sense.
Yeah, but
like, is there really a difference between a spoiled 8-year-old and like an all-powerful dictator? You know, your Gaddafi, your Kim Jong-un examples.
Well, you'd have to throw in homicidal too for all the people that.
Okay, so that was saying like Gaddafi and Kim Jong-un haven't killed anybody. It's a lot more like that.
Okay.
It's just like a pharaoh, right? Like it's you're afraid not to anger the God, which is why a lot of people follow along with what the God says. And you know, heaven and hell are right there. Well, punishment. Extreme punishment for dissidents is absolutely there in the Bible. And I think a lot of governments follow along the same route. But, you know, we can sit in politics for the next time. I have another scientific thing that I want to talk about.
All right.
Is that all right?
Sure, go for it.
Okay. Let's think of a flood. What is this thing that's going on? So before we talked about how in science we have these things called balance equations. Whatever goes in, it comes out.
Uh-huh.
So, and like I said, I was completely convinced that the flood happened maybe about 10 years ago. I was totally fine. If you came to me and said, hey, notice what happened, I'm like, yeah, of course it did. But so we had enough water to fill every piece of land mass or terrestrial land, like that's just outcropping of dirt, basically, on the surface of the earth.
Yeah.
And because the earth is a sphere, which they didn't know back in the time of Noah's story, the more higher the water gets, the more water you need to make up for the increased circumference of the earth because of the water that you've already added to it. So it's really hard to explain, but like if I were to double the size of an orange, that shell or the increased size makes, or how about this, if I were to order a pizza that's a small versus a pizza that's a medium versus a pizza that's a large, mm-hmm. the amount of pizza that's needed to make the large from the medium is substantially bigger than the amount of pizza that I need, extra pizza that I need to go from small to medium.
Right.
As I continue to increase the size of my circumference, I need more pizza to make up that perfect circle. And the same thing for Earth. You're adding a lot of water to make the world flooded. And when the water goes away, it can't just disappear, and it can't just hide inside the Earth's crust. It has to still be around somewhere. And there's not enough water right now on Earth to even make that kind of flood possible.
Yeah. It's almost a logarithmic scale is what you're saying. It increases.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
It increases as it gets bigger, the requirement to make it bigger even more. So the thing that kills me about it, if you, there have been calculations done, it says it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. Well, that's a specific time period to be able to deliver that amount of water to the earth. And if the calculation has been done that if it wouldn't be just a heavy rain, it would be like opening up a million, well, as many fire hoses that would fit in the sky and deliver rain at the speed of a fire hose, and it would basically destroy everything on the planet.
Yeah, much to the point that the ark wouldn't have been able to withstand.
Right, no, the ark couldn't have lived through that either. Now, plus all the problems of getting the animals there and getting them from, like, island countries like Australia. Yeah. And it's just impossible. But, of course, they'll say it's possible for God to do anything. Well, if it was, then why didn't he just kill the bad people and leave all the animals and the plants and the fish alone? You know, why did he...
Yeah,
it's
a really hard way to go, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I got to tell you another thing, though. That's when I was a Christian. Hey... I don't know if there's if my Christian hat's still in that booth somewhere. Do you know if it's anywhere around there?
If what?
My Christian hat.
Oh, your Christian hat.
Yeah, I have this beautiful Christian hat around there somewhere.
Okay.
Is it anywhere here?
Yeah, see if I can find that. Ah, here it is.
Okay, let's see. Oh, what?
Yeah, here it is. It's coming on.
Oh, here it is. I found it. Oh, perfect. It's beautiful. Ah, it's so comfortable. I needed it. Okay. So here's the thing. I used to be a Christian for a long time, and from that perspective, we actually had an answer in our church as to where the water went.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to look in the oceans, as well as if you were to look at like fault lines, we would say that these were lines that caused earthquakes or necessarily caused continental drift. We would say that these are the cracks that occurred to absorb the water that had happened during the flood. And because of that, those cracks in the earth, we are now, it's still settling, those cracks are still settling. That, the earthquakes that we have are proof that the floods actually occurred. Are you following along with what I'm saying?
Well, it's proof of something, like continental drift. But, I mean, to tie it to something like that, you'd have to supply evidence. You just can't make a claim and say, this is true. You know,
here's the claim that we also supported. We also supported that because certain areas would drain faster than others, there would be areas that would be accessible for animals to transfer themselves as the water was being drained from the earth faster than others. And that's why you have kangaroos and wallabies and echidnas in Australia, but nowhere else in the world. It's because as the earth was draining, all the water was being absorbed back up. Animals could find new routes to migrate, and they got cut off once the ocean started to pull back in again.
Yeah, but who wound them up? Why didn't one? I mean, the kangaroos go one place, and the other marsupials go another place. Did they all get together and have a meeting? I mean, did they vote on it? How did they know about Australia to begin with? You know,
Australia is like a big place. If all the marsupials went in one direction, and all the non-marsupials went in another
direction,
did they
have GPSs?
Right.
And what about the fossils? What happened to that along the way?
They picked up all the fossils on the way because there's none on in between.
How did you get that question? Are you asking me a question?
Yeah, I was saying they didn't have. We have never discovered any marsupial fossils outside of Australia, except for maybe the American possum.
Exactly. That's proof that the animals all went in certain directions as the walls is draining.
Did they pick up all their dead on the way? Because there's no fossils on in the path.
You know. But there wouldn't be any fossils of kangaroos in Africa because they all migrated to Australia when the blood was being drained. Like, it's not a complicated thing, right?
Sure,
they
eat
many buzzards.
They hopped down there within 3 days.
And now we have what we have.
Yeah, they just spent 3 days in the journey hopping down to Australia.
They quantum travel.
There you go. There you go. That's it. That's basically it. And there are guys about it having God. When you have an all-powerful, magical being, how can you say no?
Yeah. Another thing is that theoretically the flood was supposed to have wiped out all people on Earth except for one family. But there were extant civilizations going on at that time. We have the Egyptians, the Chinese, the Sumerians, all had flourishing civilizations during that time, and none of them in their history seem to have mentioned the fact that they were wiped out. Why is that? Not only that, but they had navies. Yeah. They had their own navies. Why couldn't they have survived? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's a little telling. It's almost as if they didn't realize that there are other countries beyond what they can see on the horizon.
Right. Well, what gets me is that little, the global map that I see that's got a little tiny little red circle around the Middle East and say, God didn't know of anything outside that circle. And it gives you some perspective of the thought process that went into the Bible.
I hear that.
So, are we still on Christian Science, or do we have anything else that we want to
do? Oh, we can go all day, but okay. We're going to go to the bottom of the hour, too. Yeah. One quick one before we break for music.
Okay,
so, for the people who are anyone listening for posterity, if you break open your Bible to Leviticus 11:13-19, that's 11, chapter 11, verses 13 and 19, you'll have this one comment that it has started to irritate a lot of people who don't like it when you take the Bible literally, but when they take the Bible literally, it's totally fine for them. And the thing that stands out is that God makes a list of animals that people are allowed to eat and not allowed to eat. But he goes into different sections, and chapter 11, 13 through 19 in Leviticus goes over the kinds of birds you're not allowed to eat. And he names birds such as owls, seagulls, any kind of hawk, ravens, for example, but also the bat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you guys ever heard of that one? So the bat is considered a bird in the Bible, which is a very interesting thing, at least as far as science is concerned, because even back then, they had an understanding of what qualifies birds and what does not qualify birds. But that was in Egypt. That was in China. It wasn't in Mesopotamia. And so it's actually a really interesting thing that the God of these people understands science as well as those people understand science. It's kind of telling. Just for the record, to be a bird, you need to have feathers. It's a really useful thing. So, like, you don't necessarily have to fly. There's a lot of birds that don't fly, like ostriches and emus and penguins.
Yeah.
But they all have feathers. Most of these things have feathers. And bats have no feathers, but they can fly. So you have mammals, which are bats, that can fly because they have wings. Mm-hmm. But they don't have feathers, so they're not birds. Mm-hmm. So it's a really interesting thing that, you know, that in the Bible you would have to think like that.
Yeah, you would think that God knows that, but he apparently doesn't. Anyway,
delicious.
Let me go ahead and take a station break. This is WOZO LPFM 103.9 live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we're going to go to a song and a couple informational messages, and we'll be back in about 5 minutes. Hang on.
If you live in or around the Knoxville area and are questioning your religious beliefs or simply believe in one less God than everyone else, well, you're not alone. The Atheist Society of Knoxville is a fun and friendly group of people just like you that meets twice a week at a bar or restaurant. We meet every Tuesday night following the show at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria for happy hour. You'll find our group either inside or on the patio. Look for Richard Dawkins' silver-jacketed book, The God Delusion, standing upright on the table. But if you plan to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch, please don't. We all question what we believe at one point in our lives. If this is the time for you, come join us for food, drink, conversation, and fun.
In southern Ohio, just north of Cincinnati, I beheld a vision. Next to the expressway was a 60-foot Jesus with his hands in the air. Looked like he's carved out of butter, just like at the state fair. Big butter Jesus, sweet cream Jesus, old country fresh Jesus, unsalted Jesus. Oh, promise Jesus, Imperial Jesus. Can't believe it's not Jesus. Holy, oh Lord. Well, you see him from the chest up, like he's about to do a backflip, like he scored a touchdown, or maybe melting or about to drown. Well, I've been to the state fair, seen a cow made out of corn cobs, Garth Brooks out of string cheese, and the Virgin out of olives. Big butter Jesus, sweet cream Jesus, old country fresh Jesus, unsalted Jesus, old promise Jesus, Imperial Jesus. Can't believe it's not Jesus. Holy, oh Lord. Shipped in pieces on a flatbed, staring backwards was his big head. Driver stuck in traffic backups, desperately avoiding eye contact. Well, don't make no graven images, that's one of the Ten Commandments. I hope the grading curve is kindly, you get to heaven with a 90. Big Father Jesus, sweet cream Jesus, old country fresh Jesus, unsalted Jesus, old promise Jesus, Imperial Jesus. Can't believe it's not Jesus. Holy, oh Lord. Can't believe it's not Jesus. Oh, spread the word.
Do you find stories of talking snakes laughable? Do you prefer the scientific method over supernatural beliefs? Are you concerned about religious leaders and organizations imposing their values and rules on your body, your family, and the rest of our society? Well, take comfort in the fact that you're not alone. The Rationalists of East Tennessee meets weekly for fellowship and provides a forum for people who support skeptical thinking and rational discussion of these and other issues. To find out more information or to find out about our next meeting, visit us on the web at www.rationalist.org.
We're back. This is Doubter 5 with Riv and Wombat.
Yo.
And we're back on Free Thought Radio. We've got to turn off the air conditioner so it won't be making noise.
Sorry.
Okay. I promised at the opening of the show that I would mention the Free Thought groups that are here in Knoxville. And as soon as I identify the station, this is WZOLPFM 103.9 live in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is the Free Thought Radio Hour. The two groups, the main groups here in Knoxville are for freethinkers and rationalists and agnostics and atheists. The first is the Atheist Society of Knoxville, which meets every Tuesday down in the Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria, about 5:30 or so. We usually go to about 8. Come on down. We usually have maybe 25 to 35 people. Some of your favorite atheist friends will gather there. And beer, food, conversation, and fun. If you plan to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch, please don't. Also, we have the Rationalists of East Tennessee. The Rationalists meet 2 Sundays a month, the first and third Sunday. They met today, matter of fact, down at Pellissippi campus up near Hardin Valley Road. They meet at about 10:30 and have a presentation and or discussion every other Sunday, pretty much. And today's discussion was about evolution and the court cases surrounding the growth of law.
Limits of science
and education.
Well. Hmm? Limits of scientific knowledge as well.
Right, and the limits of scientific knowledge. It was very, very illuminating discussion and lecture. And you're welcome to join them every other Sunday, first and third, at 10:30 at Pellissippi. Now, we mentioned a TV show. We have Free Thought Forum. It comes on Tuesdays at 5 o'clock and goes to 6 o'clock. It's an atheist television call-in show, so you're welcome to call into the show and talk to them live on the air. That's on CTV, which is Community Television, CTV Studios downtown. If you don't have Comcast, you can watch them streaming on live at ctvknox.org. If you do have Comcast, you can watch them on Channel 12 every Tuesday, well, almost every Tuesday, at 5 o'clock. They get preempted once a month by the Beer Board and their meetings, but three Tuesdays a month, you'll find them on Comcast Channel 12 at 5 o'clock on Tuesday. And I guess that's about it. Getting back to our topics, we were talking about the flood and other tall tales from the Bible. And hold on just a second. Make sure this microphone is turned on well. Ty, are you there?
I'm here!
Yeah, Ty. Okay. You wanted to get into another example of a tall tale from the Bible, didn't you, when we came back?
Yeah, let's keep going through some of the greatest hits. Okay. Again, I think the point of it is, when I was a Christian, I took a lot of these for granted. And even when I was taking, like, very high-level chemistry, you know, geology, and, I don't know, calculus classes, or whatever kind of psychology classes I was doing, I took these as truths, even when I was in those courses, because I separated what the stories were from why they existed, which was, like, this false barrier I was putting between the two. So if anyone's listening, I hope what we get out of this is that you don't have to erect this barrier between science and common sense. It's totally fine to look at these stories for what they are, as like these ridiculous tall tales that hopefully can at least help you to at least be comfortable with the idea that other people think that same way too. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing right now is looking at greatest hits from the Bible that I use to support with science. And I think another good one is being swallowed by a fish.
Swallowed by a fish. Yeah, nobody I know of in modern day has ever been swallowed by a fish.
Nothing
I know of.
That's amazing. That's
never been reported.
Okay.
Something I mentioned before went on is just, I mentioned the flood portion, went beyond it, was it's interesting that Christian people, apologetics, or people kind of floundering about when they get caught in a crosshair of not sure how to answer. You know, one of the bigger, most known was thermodynamics, right? It's conservation of energy and so on.
Yeah.
Therefore, must be a creator, so on. But then when you throw at them, what about the water? The rate the 40-day period, it must have arisen and receded. What happened to it then? They don't have an answer. Yeah. So it then just... You know, cognizant is complacent to worry about it and ignore it and move on. That's it's unfortunate.
Yeah. But this. Go ahead.
I was saying it's such a bizarre thing, because in order to be a good Christian, you have to not just, you know, when you assume the Bible is true, but when you have to go through that, you have to go through such lengths to actually recognize that, you know, being swallowed by a fish and being stored in its mouth and belly for 3 days, like Geppetto from Pinocchio, it's a ridiculous thing to have to absorb and have it on faith alone. And science is not based on faith. It's based on observable evidence. And if you don't observe that, it becomes a more tenuous thing to hold as a absolute truth. But it's just, when you get kicked out, or like when you realize that you can't believe that anymore, at least when you come up to the side of skepticism, it's a really hard thing to go back. It's more or less a one-way road. And I think Jonah's as a whale, I'm surprised, like, I never hear more people talk about it, because it's a really crazy story. And it involves just like I said, a guy gets swallowed, he doesn't listen to God, essentially, who God wants him to go to another place to praise his name. Why he can't do it himself, I don't know, but he always lets, you know, representatives do it for him. And one representative named Jonah says he doesn't want to do it, and so God makes a giant fish swallow him whole and stores him inside the whale's or fish's body for a period of 3 days. And in my head, when I was listening to this question, I was like, well, maybe it wasn't a fish, maybe that was just a translation thing. Maybe it was an actual whale, because whales are big enough to, like, store a person, right? But if you look at, like, the inside of the whale, they're not designed to have, like, giant cavities inside them that can host people for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. There's no, like, giant place where there's, like, a whole pirate ship inside their belly. They're a very well-compressed animal that has to dive very deep underneath the ocean.
And that requires them. Not even in any air.
Can I talk to you about it?
No, I was just saying there's not even any air. I mean, when you picture it, you just picture at least a chair that he could sit on in a chamber full of air. You know, but I mean, there's no air. And what about the stomach acids of the whale that he has that would just digest him? Or the great fish, excuse me. And it's a silly story.
It's actually not really, and it's straight up a child's book fairy tale. It doesn't take an extra level of biology to know that. This is probably outlandish to begin with. I would recommend anyone actually go and just see what a whale looks like. They know what the biggest fish looks like. All of these are animals that are not designed to have giant vacuous holes inside their body, because they dive underwater and that's a lot of pressure.
Right.
And that would be too much pressure for them to maintain, or too much body pressure for them to maintain in their bodies, which would inhibit their ability to dive deep in the water.
Well, sure.
But let's take it the other way. Let's say this story actually happened. Let's say it's scientifically true this happened, and that God created a brand new organism specifically for the containment of one person, just so that person could later on give them some props in another city. Why go through all that trouble? Why not? If you can make a whole new organism out of scratch to swallow a person, why not just make one that's human sized that can do the playing for you in any city you want?
Mm-hmm.
And why aren't you still doing it now? It'd be so much more convenient.
Well, because they were primitive people and they were making a primitive story. For as far as I could tell, it was for children, but we ended up believing it because it was written down and included in a Bible.
I agree.
Yeah.
I also think it's telling that the same people who have the scientific understanding to call a bat a bird also think that a fish has a little tiny place for people to live in inside the inside of the body. It's not surprising that those two stories came from the same book to the same people.
Right. Okay.
It just shows a complete lack of scientific understanding.
Yeah. And for those listening, we do have open lines if anybody wants to call in. The phone number is 3335937. 3335937. And call in anytime. You wanted me, Ty, to remind you about Lightspeed also.
Oh, there we go. So this is kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
But if you flip all the way to, let's say, the end of Matthew, the end of Luke, and the end of John, where Jesus actually comes back and he has his doubt and Thomas moments. But then he eventually goes back to earth, like, or back to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And people write in the book that they can see him go away. They can see him rising to the sky. Okay. I have this weird theory, and tell me if I'm getting on there. But if you can see something move away from you, even if it's moving as fast as possible, it's still moving at light speed. Does that make sense? Am I making sense right now? If I can see something moving, it's moving less than light speed.
It has to be.
Light speed, exactly.
It has to be less.
If it was moving so that I could not perceive it, then maybe doing something different. But if I can see it, I at least know for a fact that it's moving at least light speed or lower than light speed.
You know that he at least wasn't warping up.
Right. I don't know if he was accelerating beyond that point, but if he was one of people seeing him float up and go into the sky, even if he's on a golden chariot, he's limited at a speed level that he's traveling at.
Well,
let's say Jesus is moving at light speed.
You can't. No.
From Earth,
well, you're
heaven.
You're forgetting the friction of the air, too. You know.
Sure, let's say he's bypassing all of that. Let's just say absolute maximal speed. T is equal to T.
Okay.
And he's shooting out from Earth and he's going into space. The thing about space, as we know it now and what we didn't know back then, is it's pretty big. It's multiple thousands of light years long. In fact, it's 14 million light years across. So imagine the scenario where we know in the Bible, we know that Jesus was more or less Christ, or we know that a person who, if he, because his name was Jesus, who was the figurehead, or at least inspired the New Testament, was crucified. And that was about 2,000 years ago, approximately, maybe 1,970 years ago.
Yeah.
If heaven exists outside of our observable universe, because we haven't seen heaven at all with any of our telescopes, then Jesus is still on a 13 million year flight path to go back home, which means he's still traveling to heaven right now.
Yeah.
If that's the case.
Unless it's on the moon. Unless heaven's on the moon.
Yeah. Unless it happens on the moon, then I'm thinking he was. Then he's laying down there like, what, 2 minutes or something like that?
Yeah.
He's down there like maybe 8 seconds or something like that. I don't know what the time would be. But that would be interesting. We've never been on the moon before. It's not that pretty.
Yeah.
That would be really disappointing if you die and you have to spend the rest of your eternity on the moon. That would be a horrible existence.
Yeah, or flying through empty space. I mean,
that can be kind of cool, man, when I think about it. Like, just, like, chilling through each day. You haven't gone to your destination yet. So, if he is still traveling through space, we won't hear back from Jesus or God for the next 13 million years, guys. So,
how about billion years?
That is
fine. You know, just to chime in on the assertion that living on the moon would be a horrible existence, I think it'd differ. I think it'd be kind of nice. You're still on the moon and walk around with less than Earth's gravity. I mean, that's just me, though. But that doesn't decide.
There'll be a plus side to it, anyway.
Yeah.
And talking about miracles and the Old Testament and New, one thing that always gets me about it when believers, you know, they'll talk about, like, they're very enlightened. They'll say, yeah, the Red Sea thing really wasn't, you know, it really wasn't the Red Sea, it was the Reed Sea, you know, and in certain conditions, you know, the bottom will dry out and people can cross it. Okay, well, fine, then it wasn't a miracle, you know, because that's what they also want to believe when they go to church. They want to believe that parting of the Red Sea was a miracle. And then now they're trying to put on their science hat and saying, well, no, it was not that. But then when they get to church, it's the other way around.
I think that's a valid point that you raised, but I just did some fact-checking of myself, and I found out that the figure that I was using, 13 million years across, was actually 13.8 billion with a B, years across. So that is a much, much, much bigger number as far as our observable universe is concerned, like at a decent resolution.
Yeah, the Earth is going to die.
That's a very long period of time.
The Earth is
going to be flying in space to get back home.
The Earth is going to die in 5 billion years because of the swelling of
the
sun.
Yeah, that's going to be a really disappointing thing. Like, even before he gets halfway across the universe, Earth is going to be toast.
Yep.
And there might even be a human civilization that spreads across the galaxy by that time, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we're not going to be nowhere near what we look like by the time he comes back. There's a lot of evolution that occurs in about 5 billion years. So it's going to be an amazing thing.
Yep. Okay, you wanted to say something about a tar pit. You brought that up a little earlier while we're on break. What's with the tar pit?
We know in the Bible we have an idea of what hell looks like. Heaven is a little bit more of an ambiguous thing, and I think it's purposely ambiguous.
Very.
Because no one wants to tell that you're going to get. You want to anticipate what you want to get. So, like, if I had a present for you, and I said, here's a present for you, you'd be, oh, that's great. And I said, it's a box of wrappers, they're green, they're made out of felt. You're like, oh, well, that's kind of disappointing now. Like, the anticipation is opening up the package, having a box that's closed and you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Heaven is very much that same thing. It's a place everyone wants to go, but as far as, like, what you'll see in heaven, what you'll do in heaven, what exactly is available for you to enjoy on a day-to-day basis, you don't really know. I knew more about my apartment that I was moving to than I knew about heaven. And that's what all of Christian Science, all of scholars working in interest of spreading Christianity.
Right.
But I know a whole lot of stuff about hell. I think everyone can tell you, like, exactly what hell is. There's great verses to pull from where you're just gnashing teeth in a lake of fire. It's putrid and horrible. There's a smell of sulfur. It's hot. It's unbearable. for all of eternity. Like, you know what hell is, but you may not know what heaven is.
Right.
But the interesting thing is, in the area that they made the Bible at, we're talking about Mesopotamia, we're talking about, like, just south of the Middle East, there's a place called let's see if I'm getting this name right. I'm going to try to pronounce this once, and if I miss it really bad, please can let me know. But it's the Berlizi, Berlizi in Turkmenistan.
I'm not familiar with it.
It's a place in the Karakum Desert that's just south of Iran. It's near the Red Sea. And it's this very large target that's had this for thousands of years. At nighttime, it literally glows in the dark. It's because there's a geothermal spot underneath this tar that makes it boiling tar and sulfur. And it's been like this for the last 1,000 years. And what's really interesting is it looks exactly like how the description of hell is. And it's right next to the people who write the Bible who explain what hell looks like. So if I were to make a blind guess, I would say, and I don't really have much to prove on this, but I would say, you know, hey guys, we need to have an idea of what hell looks like. Oh, I know what hell looks like. Have you been to that place across the street? You know, that giant bubbling carpet with flames and sulfur coming out of it? Yeah, hell's basically that. Good idea. Let's put that in the book.
Yeah, there's a place in the Old Testament or in Jewish folklore called Sheol. I think it's Sheol. That's supposed to have been the old Jewish hell, even though they didn't really believe in afterlife. You can talk to a lot of Jews today that don't believe in the afterlife, and they say that their Bible, which is basically the Old Testament, doesn't support the idea of an afterlife. But it would be a place of punishment that you could be sent, apparently, during your lifetime. And they may have fashioned the idea of hell after that. Hell is basically a fiction of the New Testament more than the Old.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's probably assumed otherwise, though.
What?
It's probably assumed otherwise. I imagine that the first concept of hell is kind of ambiguous. It's in the Bible of all, but
yeah.
The Old and the New Testament are, there's no distinctions.
What's funny is, we get into Islam, they have an awful lot of descriptions of heaven and hell, by the way, but 72 virgins and what you can do with the virgins and the milk and honey, the river of flows underneath where you live, and just on and on and on. But there's nothing in there, of course, that wouldn't be understood by people of that time, that date and time. Of course, if the religion were to be made today, there would probably be Wi-Fi and 3D TVs and just all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a tar pit in La Brea, I think it's California, that they've gotten so many fossils out of, and they've gotten so many complete skeletons out of for, like, dinosaurs. If you want to look up La Brea tar pit, it's got a very
interesting thing. What would you say then? What would you say a Christian is exercising? If, for example, if one can point to a tar pit and say, "Hey, this is hell on earth," and the other one can point to another tar pit and pull out fossils that existed hundreds of thousands of years before what people would claim to be the initiation of creation.
When
a Christian looks at one thing, one piece of evidence, and agrees with it, but also looks at another piece of evidence and shows it away, even though they come from the same source and are from the same credible source, what is that kind of bias called?
Wishful thinking, I would think. Confirmation bias. They believe one thing, and then when they look at something that says, you know, this exists, so they have to put it in context to the previous beliefs. You know, and since God is capable of doing literally anything, you know, it's just a piece of cake. Like delivering all that water to the earth, you know, we talk about how the pressure would have to be terrible for that much water to come to the earth. Of course, according to Christians, all they do is say, well, it came up from below the earth, and God just, like, blinked and was all there, you know, within 40 days. There's no need to do anything else. He's like Superman, who has every kind of power in the world or the universe. And, you know, if you think it can be done, then he can do it, you know, by a supernatural being.
which really goes around the issue of the logic and rationale. It just, it's a whole lot of gymnastics introduced to explain things that seem, you know, on surface, well, no, that's really, you know, reducto absurdum, but I guess it's possible. So.
Yes. And if you look at it on another level, it's just silly. There are stories that were made up, you know, by very primitive and superstitious people 2,000 years ago or better. And nowadays, people believe that, I mean, literally true. It just boggles the mind. We've got about 3 minutes before we have to put the parting music on. Anything you want to cover before we go on?
Sure. I just want to, I guess, highlight one point is that, you know, science is a method. It's a system that people use to explain reality. It's not concerned with an agenda. It doesn't try to sell you on anything. It doesn't claim anything to be 100% true. It's not a system used to prove anything true. It's a system used to correlate observations in the most reliable way that we have possible. The thing is, people can apply a layer on top of the science to try to sell something, and when that's being done, when you hear that someone saying, hey, this is science and it's proving X, Y, Z, or it proves this, that should raise a skepticism alarm, and you should always have, I guess, a sense of a healthy doubt to whenever anyone's trying to tell you something, whether utilizing science to prove a particular agenda. It's totally fine to be skeptical if it's a scientific issue, because that's what it's for. That's what it's designed for. But if it's a specific narrative that you're trying to push and they're using science to get you there, I think you should try to be a little bit more skeptical. That's all.
Yeah. And the thing they should really understand is that science doesn't have any bias. I mean, science could work for them as well as it could work for us or anybody else.
Exactly. Yeah,
all they've got to do is put their facts together, go out there in the field, do their research, understand the science behind what they're doing, and make a case for where they are or what they want or what they think is actually true. But they better have the facts and the evidence to back it up, or they'll just be laughed out of the scientific community.
Mm. I think that's already happened, to be honest with you, but you'd be surprised how many religious people are still in that scientific community to begin with.
Right.
So, and I think it's because they're emphasizing the same thing I did, where they separate the why and the how, but there doesn't need to be a separation, guys. That's what I'm trying to say. Well, it's totally fine to divide the truth, and whatever feels like nonsense is nonsense, right. And you should just take it out and reassess it for next time.
Well, one thing is that you have so many Christians that are in the scientific field, but when they're doing science, they're not doing religion. And there's never been a scientific fact that's been overturned by a religion or a religion theory.
Ooh, I love that point. That's a great point.
Yeah. And if somebody would like to research that and maybe call us next week, that would be great. River, do you have any parting words?
Just, I guess, to echo what Wombat was talking about, when you hear something, don't just accept it as, well, I'd like to believe that because it confirms what I see about the world, and just, you know, analyze it. I guess there's more to it, but, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I guess my parting words are, do the science. If you think you can prove evolution is wrong, prove it and write your paper, get it peer reviewed, take it in, get your Nobel Prize. Because if it's wrong, we want to know about it. I mean, that's basically the be all and end all of science. They're all after truth. And if you think you got the truth, put some facts behind it and some evidence. And with that, we'll see you next week. This is a Free Thought Radio Hour with Larry Rhodes or Doubter 5. And
Riv, goodbye.
And Ty? All that. Remember, everybody's going to somebody else's hell. And we'll see you next week.
Christy, something happened a long time ago in Haiti, and people might not want to talk about it. They were under the heel of the French, and they got together and swore a pact to the devil. They said, we will serve you if you'll get us free from the French. Mm. True story. And so the devil said, okay, it's a deal. Ever since, they have been cursed.
Oh, shake the hand of my imaginary friend. See the trouble he gets in can't be traced back to me. Oh, he can pretend at the slightest of his whim. He has the power to suspend all rules of morality. And when he gets angry, he can make the lightning strike. He can help me win the fight with his power. Yes, he speaks to me, and it's always positive, 'cause I can just ask for forgiveness and it's over. So you can't put the blame.